Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
Hey, good morning. This is hour number three. That's right. We do 4 hours of live radio every Saturday morning, 8 to 10 on another station in town, and 10 to noon right here on 570 KVI. We're glad you're with us. 21 years now we've been doing this program with this guy right here who's just standing up and stretching his legs, Dr. Jerry Mixon. You've not been standing as much today for some reason.
No.
That's not like you, but you're standing now. That's
good. I am standing up.
And if you would like to ask this guy a question about your health, you just simply need to call us right now. All the lines are open. All the lines are open here at 1-888-312-5757. 1-888-312-5757. You call right now and boom, we will get you on the air just right away. All right. We were in a discussion during the last half of the last show about sugars, artificial sweeteners, and digestive enzymes. And we're going to get back to that so you can do sort of a little presentation. But like we have been doing for the last 2 or 3 months with COVID-19, let's do just a quick little reminder here for our KVI audience. I had asked you early this morning, any good news about the virus? And your answer was interesting. So why don't you just share for a moment?
Well, yeah, you know, early all we had was theories and projections that were pretty terrifying. And now we've got experience and we know pretty much what this virus does and doesn't do and who it does it to. And what we now know is that children have very, very little problem with the virus. One child in a million probably will end up. This virus is much less dangerous to children than the flu is. Flu kills young kids. This virus almost never does. So, you know, this is flu super light for children.
Yeah.
It is not very dangerous, really, to anyone under about 65 years old. Unless you are immunocompromised, if you've had chemotherapy for a cancer, if you have rheumatoid arthritis and you are on drugs to suppress your immune response, if you have a autoimmune disease and you're on drugs to suppress your immunity, then you are at risk. But that's a very tiny percentage of the population. If you are overweight, if you have a BMI over 25, your risk of having a serious problem with the virus goes up dramatically. In fact, those over a BMI of 25, that is those that are obese, have a risk of serious problems from the virus that is 6 times higher than those that are not obese. So obesity is the single one factor, even more than age, that puts you at risk. But the vast majority of the people we now know that died were over 80. Okay. And of those over 80 who died, the majority of those had serious coincident problems such as kidney failure, heart failure, cancers of one sort or another, had had strokes. These are basically nursing home patients, people that are not able to function at home on their own. So the vast majority of people who are dying from this virus are on the verge of death to start with, and the virus kind of pushes them over.
Yeah.
The last calculation I saw said that on average, those people in their 80s who died from this virus, it shortened their life on average about 2.5 to 3 months.
Whoa.
They would have statistically died within the next 2 to 3 months without the virus. But the virus hastened their demise by a bit. That's a very different picture. I think the most astounding number I've seen is on the number of people that had died over 100 versus under 50. You know, Pete, I ask you, how many people over 100 you know in your life?
Yeah,
and your answer was none.
I don't.
But you know a lot of people under 50.
Oh, yeah.
Well, nationwide, more people have died over 100 from the virus than died under 50.
Wow.
Okay. There's not very many people over 100, but more of them have died from this virus than people under 50. You're just not at significant risk from this virus unless you've got serious health problems. If you're obese, if you're diabetic, if you're immunocompromised, you're at risk. Otherwise, if you're under about 70, you have very, very low risk of having problems. So what it comes down to, shutting the schools and closing the economy was totally unnecessary.
Mm.
We did it because we thought it was necessary.
Yeah.
It seemed reasonable at the time because we were getting projections that said literally, you know, 6 million Americans will be hospitalized and 2.2 million Americans are going to die. Well, it's not true. We now know our projections were way, way, way off.
So why is it that 2.5 or 3 months ago, when those projections were being thrown around, you sat here and said, no way?
Yeah. Well, because
you said no way. You were confident that no way.
These projections were not true. Yeah. Well, I was looking at the numbers from Asia where the virus spread before it spread here. And that's not the pattern you were seeing. You just were not. You know, you get countries like Thailand where people are quite poor. So they've had like 17 people die in the whole country.
My gosh.
Really? So, no, it was obvious that when you looked at the places in the world, you look at Thailand, you look at Taiwan, you look at Singapore, they were just not seeing those kinds of deaths. Just wasn't happening.
Okay.
So, you know, Royal College was putting out these projections. All of our politicians jumped on it. They all believed it. They were just wrong. So, if we do get a resurgence in the fall, and we may, because the virus is still around, and when the weather gets cold and people move back indoors, it'll flare. You don't need to shut down the whole economy again. You need to take people that are immunocompromised, that are obese, that are diabetic, that are very elderly and sick, and you sequester them. But everybody else should go to work and go to school and live their life.
Okay. That's so I asked if there was any good news. I would say that's at least
that's good news.
Silver lining to a dark cloud.
You know, if you look at the states that the number I look at in states is hospitalizations, not the number of people that diagnosed positive for the virus, because the vast majority of them are not going to be very sick. You know, I mean, roughly half the people who get the virus will have no symptoms. They won't even know they have it. Okay. They are totally asymptomatic. Most of those who do get symptoms will get some achiness, a cough, a low-grade fever for a few days to a week, and then they're fine. So you don't look at the number of people diagnosed with the virus. Look at the people who got sick from the virus, the people who were sick enough to go to the hospital. So hospitalizations for COVID, those are the numbers we ought to be looking at. And it's amazing. If you look at the states who did a shutdown, and the states that didn't do shutdowns, the hospitalization curves are almost identical.
Really?
Yeah. And when they stopped their shutdowns, hospitalizations didn't go up. We've got states now that have been out of shutdown for 2 months. Hospitalizations are not going up. number of virus diagnoses are going up because we're testing more people. You test more people, you'll find more positive people. But the reality is that when you look at the hospital curves, no, they're flat.
So why do some of the governors, for example, like our wonderful governor, not learn?
You mean moron Inslee? Yeah,
well,
sure.
You said that.
I did. He is a moron.
Okay. Why is he making these, what most of us consider to be irrational decisions?
As Shep and his Three Stooges would say, he's a maroon. But that's it.
okay.
I like
so
Shep.
Why? Why?
It's political.
Yeah, I mean, it seems
it's politics.
It's just he enjoys the power, and he's trying to. No. I know he's trying to advance his Green New Deal.
Yeah. He's trying to, you know, to keep things shut down in hopes that there will be an administration change. But an observation, okay, and I have said this several times, and I will continue repeating it. In science, changing your mind when the data changes is a virtue, okay? The good scientist is as willing to change his opinion as he is his underwear anytime it needs to change. Politicians are different. If they change their opinion, they're accused of flip-flopping. They're accused of being insincere. They're accused of being duplicitous. They are dishonest. We shouldn't do that to them. When the data changes, when the numbers change, everyone should change their opinion. But we don't allow our politicians to change. If a politician stakes out a position, he's wedded to that position. He's stuck with it. Otherwise, his opponents will eat him alive if he changes his mind. That's the reality. It doesn't matter if the Democrats or Republicans. Very few politicians are willing to change their mind.
Yes. Well, okay, wait a minute. Why is it then that it's mostly Democratic governors that are making irrational decisions?
They're not changing their mind.
Versus Republicans?
Versus Republican governors and so on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're politicians.
They weren't wedded to that position in the first place.
Okay.
How many Republican governors came out and said, oh, my God, we're all going to die. We've got to close everything down. Everybody lock yourself in your house. Close the windows. Stop breathing for 6 months. No, they didn't do that.
Okay.
You know? Well. And so they're free to say, wait a minute, we've been skeptical about this.
Well, this should say something. People ought to logically come to some conclusion just by looking at that reality, but so be it. I'll tell you what. There was some good news there. We're learning, at least
we're
some
learning.
Of us are. I know my hairdresser is very excited. I got a text yesterday saying, I can do business again, finally, on Monday.
Yes, so, your wife doesn't have to drive to Olympia to cut her hair.
That's right. That's right.
See, I don't do that. I sleep with my barber.
Well, I know. She's
Because my wife...
She was a professionally trained, went through all the schooling and everything.
Yeah, got a license, which is really kind of funny. But let me tell that story just for fun.
Okay. Do we have time or how long?
Well...
Let's go to a break right now so we don't screw it up later.
How Dr. Misson's wife became a licensed hairdresser so she could cut my hair.
That's right. Went to a lot of school and stuff, and I remember it well. All right. I've got two lines open right now. We are going to take calls from Dave from Tacoma about blood panel results, John from Tacoma about Barrett's esophagus issues. Okay.
Barrett's esophagitis, Pete.
Esophagitis. Well, that's not what it says, but that's correct. You're right, obviously. So call us and get in line at 1-888-312-5757. But after we learn about Bandine and her process of becoming a hairdresser, we are going to talk about sugars, artificial sweeteners, and digestive enzymes. We said we would, and we will, when we come back.
I finally went and took that free test, and it didn't hurt. I went ahead and moved forward with genetic testing and inflammatory markers and stuff like that, so I'm encouraged to see what those results are. So how would this work for my father at 80 years old?
right. 21 minutes past the hour. Pete Talbot here. You're listening for the last 21 years, by the way, to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon, sponsored, of course, by Longevity Medical Clinics. And we've got three clinics. If you're new to the program, we have three clinics throughout the Puget Sound area, one in Tacoma, one in Linwood, and in Kirkland. So we do have you surrounded. When we went into the break, Jerry, you were going to do sort of a sidebar discussion about Bandine,
your
sweet wife, cutting hair. How and why did that all develop?
Yes, because some people have thought it was odd that the doctor's wife went out and became a licensed
It was a little bit weird, but she loved it.
She loves it. She still does, actually. When we got married, you know, we had no children, and we were free to gallivant, so we were hitting 5-6 countries a year, just flitting all over the world. But then Bandine started thinking that, you know, she wanted to be productive. She'd always worked since she was 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to do something to occupy her time that she said, well, I don't really want a job because I don't want to be able to, or I don't want to have to be locked down. Because it's hard to go to an employer and say, I want to work for you, but by the way, I need 3 to 4 months off to travel. Very few employers are willing to do that. So she decided she wanted to do something artistic. And for her, she thought that doing hair and creating hairdos and stuff would be artistic. And I told her, honey, in America, these are usually kids that, if they're lucky, finished high school and they don't normally have your degree and your background. But yeah, if you want to, okay.
Yeah, she's well educated.
Well, she's a very well educated and very independent, bright woman. I often think she's a hell of a smarter than I am, but. So I paid, I forget what, $15,000, $20,000 for her to go to Jean Juarez and become a licensed beautician, of all things. And she had a great time. She really loved it. But then, about the time she got her license, she decided she only wanted to do men's hair, not women's.
Interesting.
And so she got a job as a barber, but at the same time, she had told me she really wanted a baby. And,
which was news to you.
Well, it was a change. When we first got married, she said she did not want children.
Yeah.
You know, she said, I am too greedy and self-centered. I want all of your love. I do not want to share it with a child. And I said, fine, because I've already had 8 kids and they're grown. In fact, they're all older than you, which was one of the minor conflicts when my oldest daughter found out I was dating Bandine. She said, Dad, she's 6. She's my age. And I said, no, she's not, honey. She's younger than you. But anyway, when she got a job as a barber, but we also got her pregnant. And then being on her feet all day, she found that her legs and her back and everything was hurting. So she quit work.
Yeah.
And since that day, we now have an 8-year-old daughter. She still cuts my hair. And we have some friends, a lot of immigrant friends. I think half the Chinese immigrants in the state come through my house at one point or another. And some of them are not very affluent. And so what will often happen is the grown-ups will be chatting and the kids end up in the laundry room with my wife getting their hair cut.
Okay.
So she cuts my hair and the children of all of her friends. That's it.
That's it.
Anyway.
All right. So real quickly. We were talking about digestive enzymes.
Yes.
Actually, a little bit about artificial sweeteners. Yeah. You were pointing out that if you taste sweet,
it actually changes your brain chemistry, which sends signals out to the rest of your body that basically says there's a high calorie load coming. Get prepared to make fat. And you actually shift your metabolism towards fat anytime you taste sweet, even if it's an artificial non-calorie sweetener. You still shift your metabolism towards fat.
So there's some studies that show, in fact, 1,100 or so studies on artificial sweeteners.
And they show that if you are eating excess amounts of real sugar, you have an increased risk of cardiovascular disease and stroke. If you have the same amount of artificial sweeteners in your diet, you have an increased risk of gastrointestinal disease and cancers. So all sweeteners have negative health benefits or health effects. So the answer is don't eat too much stuff that tastes sweet, period. Now, let's go to the digestive enzymes. As we age, we decrease the amount of acid produced in our stomach, and that means we are not breaking down our proteins. We're not absorbing the B vitamins as well. We're not absorbing iron as well. We aren't absorbing any of the positively charged ions as efficiently as we should. So sodium, potassium, calcium, magnesium, all of these things, along with iron and B vitamins, we start absorbing less and less well as we age. And we don't digest our proteins as efficiently because proteins are supposed to be broken down. They're very complex, large molecules, and you can't even absorb them well. You have to break them down to the constituent amino acids. That is the job of the proteases produced by your pancreas. But as we age, we make less lipase, we make less protease, and so we don't digest our foods as efficiently. So they now produce digestive enzymes, many of them extracted from the bile of slaughtered animals. Some of it's ox bile, some cow, some beef. But we basically take these digestive enzymes, and you can swallow them along with your food, and it will indeed help you break down your proteins, etc., more efficiently, and you'll get less gas, less bloating, and you digest your food better.
Quite helpful. Yep.
Yeah. So they work quite well for people that need them. So anyway, that was a call in the last hour.
That's good.
All right. Let's move on.
Let us now move right along to some fresh calls here. Tacoma, let's talk with Dave. Hello, Dave.
Hello,
welcome,
Dave.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. I like the preamble of your opening there. And by the way, Pete, your governor, he's a total loon, okay? I said it. He's nuts. Anyway, he has an attention deficit. He has an attention problem. The reason I called, Doctor, I recently signed up in Tacoma after several years of listening to you. In 17, I took a blood panel of yours. I paid privately, and my doctor accepted it. So my latest one, most recent with you, was on April 8th. Does that panel show the high-low that you wish to have as the norm?
Yeah, depending, on which report they gave you. But if you got that big 70-page report that shows, the red, the green, and the yellows?
I have that also. I'm just looking at the four-page one.
Okay.
My point is I was very happy with what my levels were, except for I had two lows. One was globulin, and one was the low cholesterol was 38 instead of 40. And my question was, I didn't think that my testosterone was that far off. So my goal, I'm 75 years old. Mm-hmm. I was curious to what my levels of testosterone is and my hormones. And I'm not feeling that unhappy to where I am. Is there anything here that would a light would show up to say where I am at on those subjects?
The values will tell us where you are, obviously. My target ranges are not the normative values, obviously. My target ranges are the normative values for a healthy 25 to 30-year-old. So, if you are a man in his, what'd you say, 70s?
75.
Yeah, if you're in your mid-70s, I would expect your total testosterone to probably be somewhere in the 300, 350 range, and your free testosterone to be down in the 50s or 60s. And that's very different from my target, which is I would want most men's free to be up in the range of 150 to 180. So,
well, mine is 60. You'd like it to be higher.
I'd like it to be 2.5 to 3 times where it is now, is where your body will function at its best.
Okay, male testosterone and sex hormone were mid range for whatever that was, but I am obviously low on the testosterone.
If you're looking at sex hormone binding globulin, is what I think you're talking about, right?
I'm looking at testosterone male, CMP 36170, albumin, testosterone panel, sex hormone 44.
Okay.
Albumin.
Yeah.
45.
All right. I don't see one in our report that actually says sex hormone. It's usually a sex hormone binding globulin is the one that usually starts with that. So I don't know. I'd have to look at your numbers. Sex hormone binding globulin is a circulating protein that actually transports the testosterone around your body. So it's a transport hormone. Okay. And so it is.
Yeah, sorry, I found it. 368 was my total.
Yeah. So my guess was not far off. Most men in your age are 3 to 350. Yeah, so, right. Yeah. Yeah. And so, like I said, I'm usually looking at 600 to 800 for a total with a free of 150 to 180. That's where most men actually function at their best. So those numbers are significantly below. You know, DHEA, I'm looking 300 to 500. Pregnenolone, 50 to 100. You know, progesterone, which in most men is your age, is down close to zero. I'm usually looking for somewhere between 2 and 6. So your numbers are not far off from what I would expect a man of your age to be. They can just be better.
Okay. One objection I have to the testosterone regimen, and that is, okay, we've had conversations about the older you get, you know, you old people don't have to take a bath every day. So my regimen is to apply the cream once a day and then wash it off once a day. Well, that's kind of going against two things, but so I'm doing it every other day. Is that a bad deal? I don't want to shower every day.
Okay. Well, a couple of things you need to do then. Don't necessarily apply it every day or apply a lot less the second day. You're going to have your clothes and stuff are going to rub some off and some is going to be absorbed. So the second day you might need to apply maybe half as much as you did the first day. Also, of course, make sure that if you haven't washed it off, you are not having contact with, skin to skin contact with a woman. Because we do not want to transfer that high testosterone load to her. She doesn't need that. Okay.
Okay.
And it'll probably raise her libido, which you might enjoy until she starts sprouting hair on her face and chest, in which case you will not be her friend. I promise you. So there.
Governor.
Yeah. So, you know, there are ways to adjust, but most men, if I raise their testosterone load up to where I want it, they now need to shower every day because you wake up those apocrine glands and you start to stink. Okay. You get BO again. You don't get BO as an old person with low testosterone.
And with that, I'm afraid we've got to go, Dave. I'm sorry. We're a little bit late for our bottom of the hour break. But good call. That opens a line at 1-888-312-5757. When we come back, John from Tacoma, then Howard from Burien about PSA numbers. Mike from Issaquah has a question about hydroxychloroquine. Good, bad, or indifferent? Lots of reasons to stick around. Plus, I've got an announcement of very good news about the free health analysis appointments. We'll be right back.
I went to a seminar 10 years ago. At that time, I noticed that my cholesterol had spiked. And plus, I was going through menopause at the time. And there were just lots of changes going on. And once I got on hormones and got straightened out, I just saw a total change in everything. I mean, I saw results like within 2 weeks. It was truly a miracle. And so, I'm hooked.
Come with me, my love, to the sea of love. I want to tell you how much I love you.
All right, 37 minutes past the hour. I was, I need to tell you, in fact, I announced it about an hour and a half ago. I'm very happy about this. As you know, we've had a shortage. Well, actually, we haven't had a shortage. It seems like there's been a shortage, but we've been adding free health analysis appointments to our regular schedule at Longevity Medical Clinics, all three of our clinics. But the truth is, they've been very popular, and there just haven't seemed to be that many left. In fact, we just checked yesterday. They found three more in the last week of June, so that's kind of fun. In Linwood only, there's three. But we just opened up the first 10 days of July for the free health analysis appointment. And each of our three clinics, Tacoma, Linwood, Kirkland, have about 13 or 14 available in those first 10 days. So that's really good news because they're going to go fast. It's a little ways out. You're going to have to wait a few weeks, but that's okay. That won't kill you. So the good news is also we made the decision to extend the free $100 worth of longevity supplements when you come in for your free health analysis appointment. And yes, you still get the two free tests, the blood test and the special in-body test as well, to help you understand what some of your basic health risks are. So there's never been a better time. Sorry, you have to wait, but they're available now on a first-come, first-served basis during those first 10 days of July. So go there now. This today I'm announcing it for the first time, and I'm happy for you to be able to do that. It's a month out, but you can grab them by going to lmclinic.com. lmclinic.com. Push on the health analysis tab right there on the middle of the page and make your own appointment. Easy, easy, easy to do. Jerry, you know, I just sort of bummed myself out. I looked at my calendar here. I'm supposed to be on a cruise ship today.
Well, I'm glad you're not.
Yeah, well, me too.
Because if you're on a cruise ship, you might not get off for a month or two.
Yeah, or longer. Yeah, we were scheduled actually this couple of days ago to fly to Rome, spend a few days relaxing and getting on a ship and cruising for a couple of weeks. And obviously, we had to postpone that indefinitely. Have no idea when I'm going to be willing to get on a cruise ship again, but we will. We will.
Once you had your vaccine.
Well, yeah, but I mean, how effective are vaccines?
We don't know yet.
Yeah, that's right.
But it should be good for probably best part of a year anyway.
Yeah, but for what percentage of the people? I've always heard that vaccines really don't help everyone.
Well, they don't help
everyone. They try to help everyone.
But that's usually a matter. I mean, you're talking about primarily the flu vaccines.
Yes, yes.
Because, you know, your tetanus and so on are very, very good.
Okay.
But the flu vaccine is not it's a problem with the vaccine. It's a problem that the vaccine is not made for the right strain of the flu.
Yeah.
Because it mutates quickly and changes from year to year. And so, you know, they have to make the vaccine months before the flu season starts. And
they're guessing a little bit.
They're guessing a bit. And sometimes they guess right and sometimes they guess wrong. This, we know what the virus is we're dealing with.
And so it'll be more the vaccine. If it works, it'll work for
well. And
most everyone.
And in the we got a dozen or so now in human trials around the world, and they are all showing that they kick out antibody. Now the question is, what level of antibody will you need to be protected against the disease?
Yeah,
and we don't know that yet. But that's stage two. Stage one is, does it induce antibody production? And does it cause adverse effects in the people?
Mm-hmm.
So that's stage one.
Yeah.
Now we're getting results of those. We know that it does produce antibodies, and we are not seeing adverse effects, at least in these small and fairly short studies. Next step is, how effective is it at preventing the disease? Challenge testing is spotty ethically.
You know, what does that mean?
Well, let's say we now have a vaccine and we think it's going to work pretty well. So we're going to give it to 30,000 people. Now we have to have 30,000 people that have had their vaccine, and we have to wait and see how many of them catch the virus versus how many don't. if those 30,000 people over the next several months, nobody gets the virus, well, then we have to say, hey, I guess it must be working. But see, that doesn't really do a challenge. A challenge would be you give the vaccine to these people, you make sure they've produced antibody, now you expose them on purpose to the virus.
On purpose.
See, now you know.
Okay.
We had 30,000 people that have had the shot. We're going to expose 30,000 of them to the virus. How many of them actually get it and how many of them are protected?
You obviously have to volunteer for that,
You'd
right?
have to volunteer for that.
Okay.
And the first rule of medicine, above all, do no harm. The question would be, well, if you're exposing them to the virus, aren't you putting them at risk of harm? So we don't do those testing. Okay. Not in America.
Oh, okay.
All we can do in America is we give you the vaccine and then we just wait and let you get exposed naturally in the community like everybody else.
Yeah.
And see if the people that have had the vaccine don't get the disease.
Yeah, of course. That makes sense.
Okay. But let's say that only 2% of the people or 1% of the people catch the disease in the course. Well, that's not very many. So your knowledge of how effective it is going to be spotty unless you can give it to lots of people for a long period of time. The trouble is we're in a hurry. We want to get this vaccine out and in manufactured and distributed this fall. Well, you can't wait a long time to see how many people get infected because we've got a short time frame.
So I'm not going on a cruise ship anytime soon.
Probably not. Now, as soon as they get a vaccine out, I'm going to go take it. And, we'll see.
Yeah.
But because I want whatever level of protection will give me. Even if all it does is increase my resistance to the disease by 50%, that puts me at significantly lower risk than having no vaccine.
Right.
So,
okay.
So, yeah, I'm taking it.
Okay. Let's go to Tacoma. Talk with John. Hey, John, welcome to the show.
Hello, John.
Hi. So you guys know me. I've been a patient for many years. So I also happen to be a cancer smorgasbord.
Okay.
And it started 16 years ago when they took out 4 feet of my intestines.
Uh-huh.
And then I just finished a couple months ago barbecuing my prostate cancer, which was number 8.
Oh, dear.
And then keeping track of things, I did an endoscope. And they said, oh, you have Barrett's. Why don't you come back in 3 years and we'll look at it again? And the alarm goes off. And so now I'm trying to get as much information as I can.
Okay. Barrett's esophagitis. Let me explain this to the rest of the audience. I'm sure you've read about it extensively already. But Barrett's esophagitis is if people are refluxing digestive enzymes and juices back up their esophagus from their stomach. It causes irritation and inflammation because you're trying to digest the lining of your esophagus. That chronic inflammatory change puts you in a pre-malignant. Basically, you start inducing abnormal changes in the tissues. So Barrett's esophagitis is a pre-malignant, pre-cancerous transition of portions of the esophagus due to chronic exposure to the digestive enzymes and acids. The prevention is obviously stop refluxing, quit running acid and digestive juices back up there. The standard therapy is to put you on PPIs, proton pump inhibitors, to turn off the acid. That at least stops the acidic irritation, but it doesn't stop the peptidases and other enzymes that reflux up there. There are a variety of treatments for this. I have seen therapies in which they go in with an endoscope and basically look at the worst areas of it and kind of cook that superficial layers of the esophagus radio waves, an electrode that has about a 6 million cycle current pulsing through there that'll run up and kind of fry the bad tissue and allow hopefully healthier tissue to grow in its place. That does turn out to be pretty effective. The problem, of course, is it's a little touchy because you were frying the part of the esophagus, and if you cook it too deep, you get in real trouble. So it is a procedure that has its own negatives associated with it. So the more conservative approach is to just basically try to stop your reflux or at least turn off the acid if they can't stop it. And so what have they suggested for you?
Well, he didn't suggest anything. Now, I have done lots of treatments in the past, including the, reflux stopping. Uh-huh. But I put that on my medical records as something that nearly killed me. Because mm-hmm. when the acid is gone, the sensation that wakes you up at night goes away. And I wound up inhaling the stuff and coughing, trying to cough it up for 2 hours. And my wife having to give me mouth to mouth to get me breathing again. So I've had better luck using the acid pills, which has shut down the reflux. I'll use your suggestions as part of the quest.
Yep, and I would say, 3 years is a little longer than I'd want to let you go.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm just a little paranoid. But I'd probably be back there in 1 year saying, would you please take another look?
You bet.
Because
you can count on that.
Yeah, because if there is an esophageal cancer, those are nasty cancers. And they have a high fatality rate. And the earlier you intervene, the better off you are. So I'd want somebody looking at least every year instead of every 3 years.
Somebody who was doing it every year for 4 years. And then they did it one more time, and it was a stage four.
Yeah. So. Unfortunately, anytime we pick a number, we're picking a number. Nobody really knows how fast your transition would take place or how aggressive it would be. We're kind of making guesstimates for the general population, and they may or may not apply to any given individual. That's, unfortunately, the practice of medicine is just that. We are always practicing and never quite accomplished enough.
Okay, well, thanks for the info. Appreciate it.
Yeah, take care, sir. Bye-bye.
All right, let's go to a break. We're a little bit late. Go to a break. When we come back, we will talk with a couple of more people. We've got an hour and 15 minutes here. So this is good news. We've got Howard from Buren wants to talk about his PSA numbers. Mike from Issaquah about hydroxychloroquine. And you, because you're going to call 1-888-312-5757. Give us a call. Dr. Mixon will answer your question. You need a second opinion. I'll bet you do. Call us at 1-888-312-5757.
Before longevity, I had 20 pounds to lose, and now they're gone. How nice is that?
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Give him two lips like roses and clover. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over.
Here we go. Let's sneak in another call before the top of the hour break. Let's go to Burien and talk with Howard. Howard, we're glad you called.
Well, I'm glad you answered. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
As far as PSA numbers, I'm 75, and I get mine tested annually. I have for the last 30 years. It's always around 1.4 to 1.8. But
good.
Reading William Falloon's editorial, I'm sure you're familiar with him.
Mm-hmm. I know Bill.
He said, he's bragging that his is below 1, and he recommends that you shoot for below 1. What's your take on that?
Bill is an enthusiast. He's the only human being I know who swears that he intends to live forever and never die. I want to live a long and joyous life, but my ambition is not forever,
Right, me too.
But I think he's a bit of an enthusiast there. If you're under 2 and you're staying fairly stable, that's pretty good. You know, the reality is, PSA is prostate-specific antigen. Let me get that out of the way for all those people that don't know what a PSA is. Sure. And it is a measure of metabolic activity from the prostate. And so if you have a large prostate, you can have a higher PSA. Or if you've got a very metabolically active prostate, if you've got an infection or an inflammation in the prostate, your PSA can jump up to 15 or 20 in a matter of a week. If you've got a cancer, cancers are by their nature rapid growing metabolically active tissues. And so your PSA will rise if there's a tumor in there. So a lot of things can give you elevated PSA. The big question is your PSA stable or is it rising? And if it's rising, how fast? What we find is that the vast majority of PSAs that go up and go up quickly and very, very high tend not to be prostate cancer. They tend to be infections, inflammation. You get an infection in the prostate, you'll get a high PSA that'll come up almost overnight. And then it can take months to come back down once you treat the infection. If you've got a PSA that is rising, every time you do it, it's higher than the time before. That is either a prostate that is getting bigger and your PSA is going up simply because of the sheer volume of prostate tissue, or there could be a growth, a tumor in that prostate that is getting bigger. And so what we find in PSAs that are rising due to cancer, if the PSA doubles in less than a year, that's a worrisome sign. That means you've got something that's growing pretty fast. If the PSA is rising, but it only goes up, say, 30-40% in a year, even if it is due to a cancer, it's usually a very low-grade indolent tumor that will probably not cause you great problems. You have already reached an age at which most places don't even want to test your PSA anymore. Right. You know, for instance, if you were at group health, they'd say, no, we don't want to test your PSA. And that's because statistically, if you got a prostate cancer at your age, you would most likely die of something else before the prostate cancer killed you anyway. So they'd rather save the money and not find out because, you know, you've reached an age, you're probably going to die before the tumor would kill you anyway, so why bother?
Yeah. Well, how complicated.
Because insurance won't, you know, it's worth knowing all these other factors.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I agree. And I check mine regularly. In fact, mine is a part of my routine test, and I get tested at least 3 times a year.
Do we test
PSA on every man, every
time?
That's
right.
Yeah.
Every quarter.
Just because we're giving our men anabolic steroids. B, we don't intend to let our men die at the average age.
That's right.
You know, the average American man is going to die at about 78 to 79 years old. I want my guys trucking along at 95 and 100, and I want them to be healthy. So I'm not nihilistic. If there's something going on, I want to find it. I want to find it as early as possible. And I want the most aggressive intervention that has the fewest downsides.
And I remember somebody I know says, if you don't measure, you don't know.
Which is why we measure and measure and measure. Yes, precisely. So,
For one more quick question then?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah.
So, quite a while back you talked about if you eat chicken feet, it's a good way to get collagen.
Yep, and pig ears and noses too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, what about shark cartilage, shark fin?
Yeah, it's just that for some reason sharks are considered an endangered species, and
You're kidding.
Yeah, frankly, I've never really worried about the future of sharks in the planet. My attitude is anything that considers itself higher on the food chain than I am, to hell with you.
Yeah,
go ahead and die.
I've been taking this supplement, with glucose,
yes,
et cetera. But the chief ingredient is shark fin, and I just wondered
sure
about that. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
Howard, Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Glad you keep listening. And we are going to have to go to the top of the hour station ID. It's something we have to do, whether we like it or not. They do at 570 KVI, a little bit of news at the top of the hour. I think we'll be back in a couple of minutes, so don't go far. We have two lines open. If you have a question for Dr. Mixon, call us at 1-888-312-5757. And if you're real smart, you've been meaning to make one of those free health analysis appointments. Well, for goodness sakes, we opened up a batch of them between July 1 and 10. They're available as of this morning. Go get one for yourself. You also get the $100 of free longevity supplements if you do, along with the two free tests. You can do that. Make your free health analysis appointment at lmclinic.com. We'll be right back.